Welcome, everyone. It's time for Spectrum West. We're about to slide into November, shorter days, but you can always count on Wisconsin Public Radio to be long on information and entertainment. Today, the arts mingled with science at UW-Eau Claire. Nursing students and those in other disciplines work to enhance their empathetic abilities by collaborating with music and theater arts indulgees. We have the professor who nurtured the idea. Jim Oliver's arrived and brings with him his conversation with Sean Dooley, directing the UW River Falls production of The Spitfire Grill, a musical that opens today, if you're listening Thursday. It's already playing if you're in our Friday audience. Jim also lists other productions playing at other Western Wisconsin theater venues. Gatsby's Gala is just 2 weeks away. The big fundraising event for the assertive crew at Eau Claire Jazz is popular and anticipated after just 1 year. We have co-chair Garrett Denny, who divulges just enough detail to attract our attention. And here's a good place to start. I've always thought the cultural health of a region can be measured by its ability to sustain and present live music. That means finding musicians to consistently participate, as well as audiences that make it all worthwhile. Think of orchestras in West Wisconsin. The Chippewa Valley Symphony and Youth Symphony, the Eau Claire Chamber Orchestra, the Red Cedar Symphony, orchestras in colleges and schools, and today's focus, the St. Croix Valley Symphony. Its 55-year history is testament to commitment and devotion to an ideal. And the 2015 version, under the direction of UW River Falls Director of Bands Kristen Chernohoy, proudly presents a unique and rare opportunity this Sunday. Your history in this big West Wisconsin neighborhood.
Well, that's a great question. I am originally from New Richmond, Wisconsin.
Well, there you go.
Yes, I was born there and raised there, then went to college in Luther College and studied music and got my graduate degrees at the University of Minnesota before I taught in Hudson, Wisconsin. So I'm a definite Western Wisconsin kind of gal.
No kidding.
I've been working at the University of Wisconsin River Falls for 22 years. And I lead the St. Croix Valley Symphony Orchestra, and that is a regional orchestra that covers pretty much from, I would say, Menominee up to Luck, over to St. Croix Falls, down to Red Wing. No, I have somebody from Pepin all the way over to Wayzata. So
wow.
It's kind of a wide area.
How many members?
I have 54 members.
Well, that's a nice number.
It is.
Good sounding thing. A good sign that one enjoys their chosen vocation is a lot of extracurricular activity in the same vein. Musically, you are industrious. Your candle burns brightly on both ends. So you mentioned the Symphony Orchestra. We might be familiar with established groups like the St. Croix Valley Community Band, the University of Wisconsin River Falls Symphony Band. There's one that was your invention, the Three Rivers Concert Band. Tell us about that.
All right. Well, you are correct in that. The Three Rivers Concert Band is something I put together. We believe we're in our third year. And that group was created to be an extension of the University of Wisconsin River Falls and yet serve members that are not students. Retired members serve some of my community band members. Hmm. They were seeing that I was taking the University of Wisconsin River Falls Symphony Band pretty much all over the place and serving them. And my summer group said, why not us? And so I created Three Rivers, and you can call them the St. Croix, the Mississippi, the Minnesota, or the Kinney, depending upon where you live. And so the Three Rivers Concert Band is a collaboration with a friend of mine named Amy Royson Foley. She's from Mankato State.
Mm-hmm.
And we combine our community bands and offer to any of our students or adults, teachers in the region, and we are a tour group. So our next experience is this June, and we'll be touring Budapest, Vienna, and Prague.
Wow.
And so we rehearse separately, then we rehearse together, and we put our artistic creativity together, and we do service and collaborative concerts abroad.
Hmm. Do people say Kinney because they just don't want to say Kinnick, Kinnick?
I think that we're all afraid that we might pronounce it incorrectly, but you're right. It's Kinnick, Kinnick.
I'd love to see some, somebody from way out of the area see that for the first time and then utter it. Wonder how they would do that.
Almost like Chernohoy.
No kidding. Yeah, it was a revelation to me. So you also have at UW River Falls a composers conference that welcomes chamber music composers. When does that happen and how often has it happened? And tell me about that.
The Composers Conference is an inspiration from something I viewed in Spain, actually. We were performing in Buñol, which is one of the towns outside of Valencia, and they had a poster for a Composers Conference. And I looked at that, and I thought, my goodness, I know some of these people. Hmm. What a novel idea. So I inquired, and the proprietor of that is Gregory Fritz from the Berklee College of Boston. And he was doing that over in Spain 2 weeks after I was there. And I thought, this is a great thing. I think I should host something similar, knowing how many composers there are in the region and in the world. So this idea is an October every other year event. It takes place this third full weekend of October here at UW River Falls. Last year, we had this conference, and I believe our first prize was like $1,000, and then we gave out two $500 prizes, mm-hmm. and we had 18 chosen composers from 88 entries.
Wow.
And they were both domestic and abroad. So we chose the 18 best, brought them to campus for a three-day seminar. Everybody got a CD of their works being performed, if you will. And then the winners, we had an event, a concert. And then one of the other parts of the grand prize was that a professional ensemble, in this case the Ansia Saxophone Quartet, mm-hmm. was to work and do the recording so that you had a stellar recording of your prize, which was the composition. By the way, the audience voted. We had a panel of judges, but the audience also voted for 50% of the ballot. We did it. Yeah, so it was very interactive.
Yeah. Well, now that I know that you were born and raised in western Wisconsin, some of these affiliations aren't as surprising. You have been affiliated with the Shell Lake Arts Center. You're a camp director there. ArtReach St. Croix, you're part of that. The FIPS in Hudson, because you were there at one time, and more. So you're in demand. All that stuff must keep you on your toes, huh?
I would say that I'm definitely on my toes, dancing a little bit, but loving what I do. As long as I've got the inspiration, the musicians keep showing up. Yes, I serve the region.
Very nice. On the telephone with Kristen Chernohoy. She's director of bands at UW River Falls. The reason we are talking, well, we wanted to get to know her better, of course, but there's a special concert coming up Sunday with a special guest, and it features the St. Croix Valley Symphony Orchestra. I should actually say guests. It's very much plural on the guest list. Anthony Kearns.
Well, Anthony Kearns hails from Dublin, Ireland. He is a classically trained tenor with an incredible ability to sing what audiences love to hear. Mm-hmm. Yes, he does his whole opera thing, but he has a rebirth and a passion for Broadway hits, for songbook, Viennese romances. He loves the Italian classics, and yet it always has a little lilt and personality of any good Irishman.
You also have Natalia and Phil on violin and piano. Tell us a little bit about
them. Sure. Natalia Moiseeva is a violinist. She hails from Russia originally. She's actually on staff at the University of Wisconsin River Falls, and she's the concertmaster of the orchestra. And so she will be playing two or three solos plus being featured in a Haydn piece. Our opener is Haydn 103, Movement 2.
Mm-hmm.
She is amazing. Now, if you think I have a schedule, she rivals it because she performs with the Minnesota Opera, Minnesota Orchestra, St. Paul Chamber Orchestra, and the Duluth Symphony, and she juggles that life with her teaching here at the university. She is a personality and one of the most talented violinists I've had the honor to know.
Wow. And Phil?
Phil is a graduate, Phil Cadidlo, and he is also, just like myself, kind of a Western Wisconsin plant, if you will. Phil grew up in Hudson, Wisconsin, mm-hmm. and he is married and lives in the Valley, and he hails as the music director at Trinity Lutheran Church in Stillwater, Minnesota. He's also a prolific jazz musician. He's written books, and he performs with numerous groups. And again, just a genuine guy. He is going to be accompanying Anthony In fact, I'm giving him my role. Usually I do the solo piano stuff, but Phil is such a great guy. I'm sharing the glory. And so Phil will accompany Anthony on a couple tunes. He'll play with a little combo during the reception and during intermission. He is, again, amazing pianist.
Yeah, and you know, when you mention Anthony Kearns and being an Irishman, I see he's going to sing Danny Boy. I would expect that.
Of course.
And Granada, and I'll be seeing you. Man, there's an old standard. And when Irish eyes are smiling.
That's exactly right. So
good,
he's going to do all these things that people will love to hear. In fact, I should let you know that the first set of tickets that were sold came from people in Canada, Spokane, Washington, Washington, D.C. We've got people coming from Tennessee.
Wow. There,
because this man does not do too many solo performances. He usually travels with the Irish tenors, as you can see on public broadcasting. So they've got their own tour of holiday things, but you rarely get to see Anthony with an orchestra in a solo concert.
Wow, that's quite a find for you guys. That's a coup.
It is. Thank you. In fact, I think I signed the contract 5 years ago.
So you've had a long time to anticipate.
I have.
And prepare. The concert is Sunday at 3 in the afternoon at Trinity Lutheran Church. That is across the river in Stillwater, Minnesota. How do people, well, you've got a lot of people coming already. How do they get tickets?
You can get tickets ahead of time by calling Artreach St. Croix and also scvsymphony.org. You can buy tickets online. Mm-hmm. Or you can buy tickets at the door.
Wow, you have a wonderful program waiting for people. And thanks for being with us here on Spectrum West. I have a feeling that you and I are going to talk again and again and again.
I love it. Thank you for the opportunity, and enjoy the day.
Oh, Danny Boy, the pipes are calling from glen to glen and down the mountainside.
Thought you'd like to hear a little bit of Anthony Kearns there. Again, the orchestra website is scvsymphony.org. Kristen Chernohoy, that's spelled T-J-O-R-N-E-H-O-J. Take a guess whether or not I had to ask her how to pronounce her name. You guessed right. This is Spectrum West. Support for WPR comes from Luther College, a selective residential liberal arts college in eclectic Decorah, Iowa. 2.5 hours south of the Twin Cities. More information on the web at luther.edu. Support also comes from Simply Dunn in Downsville, a place for gifts, ideas, and space for events. Home of Dunn County Pottery, featuring wood-fired pottery and fair trade gifts. More at simply-dunn.com. Spectrum Memo, Boo, an evening of favorite spooky stories and poems read by Northern Lakes Theater Guild members, is Saturday, 7:30 p.m. at the Northern Lakes Center for the Arts in Amory. The Menominee Arts Music Society presents Two's Company, a recital of classical duets, Sunday, 2 p.m. in Fellowship Hall of First Congregational Church of Christ in Menominee. It's called Gatsby's Gala. Its success last year, the inaugural one, precipitated not only a reprise, it dictated the need for more room because the gathering in human numbers was overwhelming, thus making the area allotted underwhelming. Gatsby's Gala 2 is a couple weeks away, and the excitement is building. Garrett Denny is an Eau Claire Jazz Board member and stopped by with an update beginning with requested credentials.
So I'm vice president of the board and then co-chair of Gatsby's Gala.
So then it is apropos for us to mention the fact that the Eau Claire Jazz Festival is April 22nd and 23rd. Mm-hmm. In the new year, big exciting new things for the Jazz Fest?
Yeah, there will be. There will be.
No cats out of the bag yet, though.
Well, yeah, you always have to keep a few up your sleeve, but it continues to grow. 52nd Street in particular, we were about at fire code for every bar on 52nd Street last year. So this year we're just dealing with growth. It's a great problem to have.
So Gatsby's Gala must be, is it gala or gala?
Depends who you ask.
I always say gala. Must be successful because you're doing a second one.
We are, yeah. This whole thing was launched last year, you know, to replace what used to be the big band extravaganza. Well, there's still a place for this music in Eau Claire, but it needs to be a different event, and it absolutely blew up. It's been great.
So your involvement with all this, they have you for your marketing genius, or are you a musician?
No, I've got a history in jazz myself. I played trumpet up until I went to college, and then I roomed with a couple of Jazz One guys, so I always stayed in the community. Upon graduation, I was invited to join the board of Eau Claire Jazz and kind of help steer this thing. And it's just been a great ride. We're fortunate. It's a talented board.
Without getting specific, what's it like to room with Jazz One guy?
Without getting specific? Keeping it rated PG?
Yeah.
No, it was a good time. It was a really fun time. You know, jazz guys tend to be creative types. They tend to be guys that have a deep passion for music, and it really kept that fire going in me. Even though I stopped playing, staying in that community, I think, was one of the better decisions of college, and I now have quite the vinyl collection to prove it.
I'll bet. Was there a lot of music on all the time?
Oh, a ton, yeah. Practicing in the house, jam sessions in the basement.
Oh,
yeah,
really?
Definitely.
Instant entertainment for the party.
Oh, absolutely. Can't complain.
Eau Claire Jazz as an organization. Describe the physical plant. What's a typical day like at Eau Claire Jazz? I mean, you don't work. Do you work there? No, you don't work there.
No,
you're just on the board.
Volunteer on the board.
But when you stop in.
Yeah. It's controlled chaos. A lot of our success boils down to the fantastic core of interns that we have. A whole bunch of our events are run by student interns.
Okay.
So they are affiliated with the jazz program. They're musicians themselves. And then they volunteer time to help run these events.
Mm-hmm.
So the rest of us just show up. We lend financial expertise. We oversee the logistics and so forth. But those interns are the real workhorses and stars of the show. They do a great job.
Good deal. So is this typically a busy time of year?
Getting busier.
With Gatsby, between now and what, April, you're hopping around?
They are, yeah. Well, it's funny. You know, our two kind of signature events are 6 months apart. So
yeah.
You would think, well, it's a good time to rest and kind of get your head back on straight. But you hit those holidays so fast in between Gatsby's Gala and then you come out of the new year, you're staring at Jazz Fest and 52nd Street right in the face. So it gets busy.
He says gala, I say gala. That's Garrett Denny. We're talking about Gatsby's you-know-what, which is coming up Friday. And you guys must not be superstitious because you planned it for Friday the 13th, 8 to 11 o'clock. In a few locations, but they're next door to each other. So let's get into particulars. In the Ojibwe Ballroom, Jazz 1 and 2, backing up. You run with this.
Yeah, this year is going to be quite the show. You know, the real problem we had following last year, Al, as you well know, was it was such a success. We sold out. We were at fire code for the event space.
Mm-hmm.
How do you top that, and how do you keep that vibe going? So we've added two new rooms, and in the main room this year will still be the main party space. As you said, Jazz 1, Jazz 2, and a whole slew of guests. Joel Pache of Irie Soul. I've got a list that we'll have to put on your Facebook page. Forward Brass Band is coming back. So we're really fortunate to have a number of guest artists that will be kind of jumping in and jumping out throughout the night.
People know the name Sue Orfield. She's going to be there.
Huge.
Docs Robotics.
Yes.
Hip-hop group.
Docs Robotics, yeah. They are a student group coming out of one of the jazz bands. And, they'll be performing a little bit of a surprise number for the audience.
Really?
Yeah, it'll be fun.
Why, there's so many surprises that you're just not letting us in.
That's right. Well, you know, the big selling point, I think, of last year was this fusion between classic jazz, hearing some jazz standards, golden age jazz, that people love to come out for any season, any time of the year. But then we bring these kind of unique flavors from the community, whether they're student performers or folks like Sue Orfield that are, established, and kind of mix them in. Last year we had a Beyonce tune, a Fergie tune, really kind of spiced it up.
So the Ojibwe Ballroom is where all the energy, if you stood at a distance, you could see waves of stuff coming off the roof of the Davy Center, I'm sure, from where the Ojibwe Ballroom is. And then you're going to have the Dakota Ballroom this year, and that's kind of a quieter, more, from what I read, a more intimate place to go.
Yeah, it's going to be nice. You know, one of the counterpoints that we really wanted to bring in this year was a place to kind of grab a drink, take your date, sit down, chat, a place to be able to talk and decompress. It's a solid party in Ojibwe. So somewhere where you can go off, stop by the bar, find a quieter seat with lower lighting, I think is really important. Oh, it's going to be nice.
That's where the torch music will happen.
Yeah, that's right.
That's what they say. I also read that you're going to have some dancers this year.
We will, yeah. So we were fortunate to have some dancers last year as well, and we'll be working in Two to Tango this year as a confirmed kind of opener piece. We did this last year. Two to Tango was great. They're this student group. It's all students that have a love for waltz, ballroom dancing, and of course swing dancing.
Mm-hmm.
And so they're going to bring a little bit of that party to our party.
And I just got note that the Diamond School of Dance is going to perform a closing number.
That's right. Yeah, we kind of did the same thing last year, but it's kind of a big high note of the night, watching some professional and semi-professional dancers come out and really take it up the next to the next level.
Now, when I read about it, the entry stairway filled with stuff, that was impressive to me, but I have not been in the new Davy Center. So is there a stairwell that kind of swoops around, or what happens?
Yeah, there kind of is. You know, the real challenge was there is a grand entrance to Davy Center when they built this that's gorgeous, and we couldn't really use it. It's on the wrong side of the building, so we had to find a way to kind of funnel our audience in. And as they crossed the threshold, you'll remember this conversation last year.
Yep.
We wanted to be very Walt Disney-esque, so you crossed that threshold.
Were you successful?
I think we were. Yeah, people were floored. So when you come across that first threshold on the first floor into that stairwell, we want you to enter a brand new world, and it's whiskey barrels, and it's Prohibition, and it's the golden age of jazz.
Wow. So tell me about food, because, you know, if I go, I'm going to be hungry.
Always hungry. I'm always hungry. You do need something to snack on. We've got a number of desserts lined up, and then some light appetizers as well. You know,
really?
There's no full meal. Don't come hungry. Eat before you come. But I think it's late enough in the night that folks are going to work up an appetite on the dance floor.
And I see that's in the alumni room, which is nicely positioned right between the two ballrooms.
Yeah, it's kind of a nice flow, you know, so you walk over, grab an appetizer, grab a drink, and then sit down in the Dakota, catch your breath, head back into the party.
And there's a tag here that says, and maybe a surprise or two.
That's right. That's right. Always a surprise or two. We like to really mix up the sets, and again, going back to that fusion concept, work up a new number or two every year that really knocks the audience off their feet.
With it being so popular, how's parking? Have you worked that out?
Yeah, we have. We're fortunate it's late enough at night, and it's on a Friday that the parking behind Davy Center is ample and it's available, so you won't need any kind of parking pass or anything. And then if we do need overflow room all over campus, there are more lots.
And you need a lot of people dressed in 1920s attire running all over the campus.
That's a good point, though. That attire is huge. You know, last year we kind of put out the word, first event, but please come dressed up. And boy, did they respond.
There
was not a single person in there without a fedora, without an evening gown, without a suit and tie. I mean, it was just fantastic.
Really?
Seriously.
Black shirts, white ties?
Oh, yeah.
Garrett Denny, Gatsby's Gala or Gala, 8 to 11. I'm guessing that right at 11, things just don't automatically shut down. It's Friday, November 13th at UWEC.
Yeah, it's right on campus. We're fortunate that Davy Center was built just a couple of years ago. It's been an ideal venue for us. It's pretty well suited to something like this.
This thing could be too big.
You know, it's a fun problem to have. We've got this brand new event. Folks are loving it. We've never seen an event of ours, I think in our history, 49-year history now, take off quite like this. It's really something special.
And your challenge is going to be to make it even more interesting every subsequent year.
Bigger and better, absolutely. So this year we're adding two more rooms. We're slowly trying to kind of expand it to keep up with demand, but keep that environment. Anyone listening right now that was there last year knows that in that Ojibwe ballroom, by the end of the night, 10:30, 11 o'clock, the entire room was so packed. It was shoulder to shoulder listening to this jazz fused with, again, with some modern numbers. It was just pulsing with energy. I can't even describe it.
How's the lighting? Is it nice and subdued and there's colors?
It's fantastic. Good, yeah, we had the big double G logo kind of projected all over the room. We're fortunate. Jason John Anderson, who runs event production at the university, sits on our board, and he's got a master's in lighting design, oversaw all the lighting for us, so he killed it.
Good deal. You can't say kill it, because you had a...
Well,
you
if
had,
you know the ending,
you
yeah.
Yes, you did have a kill it thing.
That's right. Yeah.
Thanks for coming in, Garrett.
Thanks for having me.
Gatsby's Gala, 2 weeks down the road on November 13th. Tickets at the website eauclairejazz.com. And you have enough time between now and then to rest up and get in shape. Fun stuff. This is Spectrum West. I'm Al Ross. Good to have you with us here on WPR. Oftentimes, the name of a play or musical is more than enough to attract attention. That's the case with a current production in River Falls. Jim Oliver, front and center.
The University of Wisconsin-River Falls University Theater will present The Spitfire Grill through Saturday and next Thursday through Saturday. The Spitfire Grill is an American musical based on the 1996 film of the same name. The play opened in 2001. The director is Sean Dooley, an instructor in the UW River Falls Theater Department and a working actor in the Minneapolis-St. Paul area. So welcome back to Spectrum West.
Hi, Jim. Thanks for having me.
So tell us what the story is about.
Well, I don't want to give too much away because
well, no,
I'd like people to be entertained and surprised. But the story is quickly about a young woman who has spent 5 years in prison. And upon getting out of prison, decides she wants to go to a town called Gilead, Wisconsin, which doesn't actually exist, to my knowledge, in order to get away from her past and start over again. Once she lands in a very small town, she becomes everybody's business. Everybody sticks their nose in her affairs. And over the time, she comes to know the owner of the Spitfire Grill, who has been trying for years to sell her grill, and Percy, this young woman, suggests that she raffle it off.
Huh.
And so the show then details the process of trying to raffle off the grill, and why would anyone want this grill in what the locals think is a fairly godforsaken place.
So I take it this is an all-student cast and crew?
It is an all-student cast and crew. There are seven actors. A few folks, technical folks. We have a student assisting us designing lights, which is not always the case, so it was a great opportunity for one of our students. And a five-piece band that is from the local area.
Well, the last time we spoke on this program, you were directing William Shakespeare's Richard III.
Mm-hmm.
Talk about the similarities and contrasts for student actors who are performing in a Shakespeare play and in an American musical.
Well, they're both very challenging. I'm not sure the similarity goes much beyond that. But the challenges are great that just happen to be unique. So if you're doing Shakespeare, the language is obviously a challenge, as is a fairly complicated story, one that often contemporary audiences as well as students struggle to understand. With a musical, obviously, we have songs. There's about 20 numbers in the Spitfire Grill, and so we have to sing. We also have to communicate what's being said in the song. We might sound pretty, but if we don't communicate what's in the song, then we may as well not sing it. And then we've got just some technical things. You know, you're singing into microphones. You're working with a live orchestra, in this case, a five-piece band. And then the subject matter, this is not a comedy. It has its lighter moments, but it's more of a drama.
Mm.
And in that sense, it's a little difficult. I actually, this morning, was teaching an intro class, and we were talking about expectations and the fact that if a movie or a play or an art show, whatever the case may be, if your expectations are one thing and then you go to it and it's something else, you may not like it regardless of what it is. And so I was talking to the class about here's a musical, and I asked them to brainstorm what they think a musical is, and of course they think it's a comedy. They think there's flashy costumes, there's dance numbers, and that's not what this musical is. So we were working a little bit in class on expectations and understanding that in order to succeed, sometimes one of the things you have to do is educate the public and let them know what they're going to go see.
There are some other musicals around. Sweeney Todd is the one that comes to mind, I guess, that is more dramatic and downright gruesome, I guess.
Absolutely. And doing very well in the Twin Cities area, mm-hmm. the one that's playing right now.
Yeah, it is playing there. I wasn't aware of that, I guess.
Yeah, it is. It is. Mm-hmm. Theater Latte Da is doing a very successful production of it right now.
He is Sean Dooley, director of the University of Wisconsin River Falls Theater Department's production of The Spitfire Grill. Well, you're a working actor as well as a theater instructor. So give us a Cliff Notes version of what your educational and professional background is.
Sure. I did my undergraduate work at Wisconsin-Eau Claire and graduated from there in 1990. I went on to the University of Minnesota for my Master of Fine Arts in Acting. From there, I've stayed in the Midwest for the most part, working in theater and in film and television. I've been here at River Falls since about 2011, but I have continued to work in the cities in lots of different venues. Most recently, I was in Juno and the Paycock at the Guthrie this summer, which was Joe Dowling's last production before he left as artistic director.
You know, I saw Juno and the Paycock many, many years ago at the Guthrie. That was a wonderful show, and I haven't heard much about it since. And I was kind of hoping if I could make the trip over there just to see it this time, but I didn't manage it.
It's not an upper. It's not a real heartwarming sort of show. It was very well received and well attended this summer, and I thought Joe really did a wonderful job. He brought three of his friends from Dublin over to play the main roles. And so for me, getting to be in the room with Joe and these three other Irish actors was sort of a class in and of itself.
Mm-hmm.
The Irish history that the play details wasn't just history. You know, they were talking about, well, my grandmother remembers being on the street as a kid in 1916 during the Easter Uprising.
Mm-hmm.
And so it really brings it home as something that is not really in that distant past, but something quite near to our experience. So it was a lovely experience for me to get to do, and I do think audiences liked it, but it certainly is not a something that makes you laugh.
No, that's for sure. Without getting into specific schools, what should a potential theater student be looking for in picking a college or university to study theater?
Sure. Well, you know, that's a very difficult question because every student is different, and I'm sure each program is right for the right kind of a student. So one of the things I think you need to think about is spend a little time self-evaluating who you are and what you like. Do you like being in a big city? Do you like being in a small city? Do you thrive on the energy of a place that's quick and fast-paced, or do you seem to have more success in a slower paced environment? But beyond that, I think you need to think about what you need as a performer. So if you've had a lot of experience in a certain area, maybe you don't need that as much of that in college. Colleges have lots of different focuses. So you can be a performance major, you could be a technical theater major, you could be a musical theater performance major. In fact, Stevens Point has a very well-respected musical theater program specifically at their campus. Here at River Falls, we have just created a new major that is called the Screen and Stage Arts major. We have joined theater with film and television, both of which have existed here on their own in the past, but we are trying to take the two related art forms and work them together so that I'm actually teaching an acting class that is both for stage and screen. We do costume and makeup for both stage and screen. We're doing production management for stage and screen. So if you're interested in both stage work and film work, that might be an interesting and unique experience here at River Falls.
Well, we've been visiting with Sean Dooley, who is director of the University of Wisconsin-River Falls Theater Department's production of The Spitfire Grill. The show runs through this Saturday and then next Thursday through Saturday in the Blanche Davis Theater, located in the Kleinpell Fine Arts Building. For ticket information, contact the theater's box office. Sean Dooley, thanks so much for being with us.
Thanks, Jim. It's a pleasure.
Sir Jim Oliver. Remember, we knighted him a while back, and he's been enjoying all the privileges that go along with that position, a prestigious mail slot, and his choice of parking spaces. Spectrum West on WPR. Happy to be here. Support for Wisconsin Public Radio comes from Mayo Clinic Health System, dedicated to offering expertise and solutions for a variety of women's health issues. More information is available on the obstetrics and gynecology page at mayoclinichealthsystem.org. Support also comes from the Minnesota Marine Art Museum. That's in Winona. The MMAM presents 10 exhibitions per year and has masterpieces by Picasso, Van Gogh, Monet, and many more. Visit and support information at mmam.org. Spectrum memo, the Chippewa Valley Youth Symphony opens their 35th performance season with their fall concert, A Halloween of Classics. That's coming up Sunday, 3 p.m., Gantner Concert Hall at UW Eau Claire's Haas Fine Arts Center. Veterans from across Wisconsin and adjacent states present their Writing and Arts November 7th at the first Veterans Express Themselves program at Whitehall Memorial High School. It's a project of the Heartbeat Center for Writing, Literacy, and the Arts. The website is heartbeat.us. You know, I like the twists and turns that can pop up as host of this program. Our area of responsibility is the arts and culture of Western Wisconsin. Sometimes we trip over the arts in places we just did not expect to find them. Here's one, nursing education. Yes, at the University of Wisconsin-Eau Claire, there's an honors course in which students enrolled in the School of Nursing, as well as other disciplines, actually collaborate with the Music and Theater Arts Department to refine skills being taught and applied. The course originator is Dr. Cheryl Lapp, a professor of nursing in the UWEC College of Nursing and Health Sciences. Not long ago, there was somewhat of a shortage. I mean, nurses could write their own ticket. What's the status nowadays?
Well, I think there's still a shortage.
Is there?
Yes, definitely. There's still a shortage. It's not too difficult for our graduates to find positions.
You have to want to be a nurse. I mean, the quote I read is, the hallmark of nursing is caring.
Mm-hmm.
Out there, there are people who shouldn't be nurses.
That's true.
They don't have the compassion or the patience.
What I worry about is a lot of people who choose nursing because they know there's job security. They know that they can always get a position no matter what state they move to. And to choose it on those pragmatic grounds isn't necessarily going to make you happy or keep you happy in nursing.
And unlike wine, nurses don't always get better with age, do they?
Well, I think that's true of anybody. We tend to become more of ourselves and we tend to get more routinized. And I think one of the important things about staying relevant and having empathy is maintaining your curiosity.
Yeah.
Maintaining your curiosity about others. And I think what happens when people don't do that is they want to feel like they've mastered a job and they make assumptions about people because they've seen it before. Mm-hmm. They've seen these kinds of health concerns before, and then they just jump to conclusions or take sides.
Mm-hmm,
or
mm-hmm.
There is a hardening that can happen. And I think we have to be very, very careful about that. And we have some language in nursing for that, to practice in a relational way or intentional. I prefer that terminology, that we should be intentional about how we practice and how we approach things so that we're not treating everybody the same.
I suppose the worst thing that can happen is if nursing becomes an assembly line.
Oh, for sure.
Yeah.
And society's changing and our needs are changing. And not only are consumers becoming much more knowledgeable because of their access to computers and looking up things, our whole society is becoming so much more diverse. The same old things we were taught about the patient is very, very different today. We have a lot of cultural diversity and, you know, we've always been mindful of cultural competence and aiming for cultural competence, which I don't believe that you can be culturally competent in, say, taking care of Somali people or Hmong, because we're not expert. We can't possibly know everything that's important to others. But I think we can certainly make great strides if we are culturally aware and if we are curious and if we listen well, then we'll do a decent job and get closer to best practice.
We're in the studio with Dr. Cheryl Lapp, professor of nursing, College of Nursing and Health Sciences at University of Wisconsin-Eau Claire. And she's here because she created a university honors program.
It's not an honors program that I created. It's an honors course.
Course.
For our very wonderful honors program.
Ah, it's an honors course.
It's an all-university honors.
The program existed. You just had it.
Yeah, the program existed and thrived before I came along. But it's an opportunity. It's a wonderful program for students of all disciplines. they apply to get in, and something that the Honors Program offers to faculty, which I think is really exciting, is the opportunity to develop a course about something that they find interesting or necessary or something they're really committed to or passionate about. A faculty member can apply to teach a course. There's no guarantee it'll be accepted, but if it is accepted by the Honors Council, then you have an opportunity to develop a course that may not be in anybody's curriculum. It's not an essential course, but it's something that is richer. It looks at something, some aspect of a discipline or cross-disciplinary knowledge that is just more cutting edge. And we have honors professors who are professor emeriti, retired.
Yeah.
What I think was appealing about it is the ability to reach out to young, talented students of other disciplines, too, It isn't something that is going to be just clinical or just only about nursing.
Yeah. Your program, not your program, your course is called Empathy Enhancement for the Helping Professions.
Right.
And the reason that you're here on Spectrum West is because it fits our mission, our shows about the music, arts, and culture of Wisconsin. And what you did within this course, there's theater and artistic expression involved. Tell us about what led up to your trip to California that kind of was an epiphany for you, or the trip itself.
The trip itself, the short version of that is I was reading about empathy and the decline of empathy in nursing. And as I did more of a literature search, I saw that there's a lot of gathering evidence that this is a problem in medicine as well as nursing. In reading the literature, research articles, I just was really excited about the work of a professor in California, University of California, Irvine, and I took her contact information from the journal article and called her office, and she was there. And I've never done that before in my life. But we had a chat, and I made an appointment with her to have another telephone consultation. And what she was doing was using scripts, theater scripts, working with medical students. And so I asked her, because I was on sabbatical by this time, and this was my project to examine empathy. It wasn't necessarily to develop an honors course at that time, but I was doing some research in the area. So I asked if I could go out there and just observe her classes. And we made those arrangements because we had a wonderful talk. I felt like I'd known her forever because we had agreed on so many things. She did invite me out there, and she also invited me to co-facilitate her class, which was a real highlight of my sabbatical experience. She was working with medical students, and her class sessions were held at a retirement community. So there were elderly people there, or seniors, sharing their life experiences, too, with health providers. Some of them had lost their partners.
Sure.
And so the scripts were being read, the parts were being read by the students and sometimes by the residents in the facility. And then afterwards, we discussed them from every perspective, what's going on in the provider's head and the experience of the resident or family member. And it was so rich. It was a very rich experience. I don't do it exactly that way in my course. I like my students to listen to art presented to them, like theater students.
Sure.
I invite theater students to the classroom because I don't want them to have anxiety about
so
acting.
Do the theater students present a scenario then that to which your students have to react?
Yes. I am very fortunate. I have a friend who's a playwright right here in Wisconsin and theater professor at the University of Wisconsin, Oshkosh. And he has given me access to a lot of his scripts, which have to do with the family and family scenarios. And I also use a lot of other classic plays. Like there's a play that was written in the early 1900s called Trifles by Susan Glasspell. And it really examines the gender issues that are deeply rooted within our culture. So I like to discuss that with the students and how we've updated that. We've come a long way, but have we come far enough? But I do get the theater department involved because I am not an acting teacher.
We'll give Dr. Jennifer Chapman some credit here because you collaborated with her.
She welcomed our students over to her studio and we did some acting exercises because empathy is a big piece of acting, the ability to get into somebody else's character. Our students did some freeze frames and interactions trying to discover what the character wants and what are the obstacles in the way, just like life, life situations, and what strategies are used to accomplish.
But nurses in their vocation, once they're a nurse, they don't act. They respond. And they
Hopefully with genuineness. Hopefully
spontaneity
in a genuine
is important
way.
With you.
Nursing education is changing, has changed, is changing too, because when I went, the big emphasis was on being very professional. You know, having this professional distance because they didn't want you to get too involved personally or too emotionally involved with the patient. There was this professional distance.
Okay.
There was just a tiny opening which was called appropriate self-disclosure. You could sometimes give an example, somebody you knew, but make it very impersonal because you're not there to get your own needs met. But that's changing now. We realize that we are all products of our backgrounds, our histories, and probably a nurse who has had experience in her own family, say if she's taking care of a woman who has breast cancer, recovering from breast cancer, she's probably going to be able to offer some things to the situation or maybe practice more effectively by having had some personal experience with it. Acknowledging what you know from your own life. There's a term called life-informed practice that now we consider that done very carefully and professionally, judiciously is appropriate. As long as you're not there to get your own needs met, it's still a unilateral relationship. It's not a two-way street.
Dr. Cheryl Lapp with us, professor of nursing, College of Nursing and Health Sciences, the University of Wisconsin, Eau Claire. It's a course called Empathy Enhancement for the Helping Professions. It incorporates theater arts in parts of the education of nurses. Finish this sentence for me. You will know this course is a galvanizing success when?
When students leave the course feeling more confident about relating to other people effectively, no matter what their profession is.
Are they already leaving?
Yes, some of them.
With that capacity?
I can't speak for all of them, but some of them have told me that and written feedback has indicated that. When I first developed the course, I was really unsure of whether I would get enough students to run the course. Honors courses are usually capped at 20. I didn't know if I would even get enough students from across the disciplines who would be interested in such a course. The day the course opened for registration, it filled up and had a waiting list. And nobody ever dropped the course, so we couldn't go into the waiting list. And I just am really, really amazed that there seems to be a need out there. And it isn't just nursing students. I had accounting students and all sorts of other majors. Yeah. And everybody sees their role in some way as working with people that they would like to become better.
The moment you said that, I was imagining accountants, CPAs, being actors and empathy. And stuff. But now that you think of it, they have to be. Yeah.
And one of the first opening exercises of the course was to bring an artistic representation or expression of something that would help us connect with a stranger. Like it could have been a photograph, a video clip, or a poem. One person used an excerpt from a video game. But it was really effective because they couldn't use family photographs. It had to be a connection with somebody we didn't otherwise know. They were invited to talk about it and say what it meant to them, and, there was a lot of class discussion and participation. I was amazed because it got quite emotional, and students were very, very open and really trusting with one another. The other thing I tried to leave with the students by the end of the course, just some ideas about communication, how to feel more confident being with people. People are often afraid to approach those who are grieving because they might say the wrong thing. We examine that and realize you don't have to worry about saying anything sometimes. Just showing up, showing that you care, is a demonstration of empathy.
On behalf of our audience, nicely done. If there's anyone from which we expect good things, it's nurses.
I think we'll probably see
a difference thanks to your creativity.
That's the goal.
Thanks for being with us.
You're welcome.
The honors course was offered in last spring semester. It appears it's going to be in demand for its effectiveness. A great story of things that affect our culture and an idea that fuses the arts with the sciences, something happening more and more these days. I bet you're wondering what's on stage in Western Wisconsin. Well, we have therapy for that kind of curiosity. Here again is Jim Oliver.
Hello, everyone. Escanaba in the Moonlight will be staged by the Chippewa Valley Theater Guild November 5th through the 8th and the 12th through the 15th at the Grand Theater in Eau Claire. Alice in Wonderland will be presented by the Eau Claire Children's Theater Friday and Saturday and the following Thursday through Saturday at the Oxford Theater in Eau Claire. The theater department at the University of Wisconsin-River Falls will present The Spitfire Grill through Saturday and next Thursday through Saturday in the Blanche Davis Theater located in the Kleinpell Fine Arts Building at the University. Sleeping Beauty will be staged November 5th through the 7th at the Old Gem Theater of New Richmond. And the Northern Star Theater will stage the Addams Family Musical through Sunday at the theater in Rice Lake. And that's some of what theater companies around the region are doing. I'm Jim Oliver.
Spectrum Memo, the name, if it's not familiar, the melodies of Antonin Dvorak's Symphony No. 9 will be, and it will be the centerpiece of the Red Cedar Symphony's fall concerts. Performances will be held at Chautauqua Lutheran Church in Chautauqua, 7 p.m. Saturday, November 14th, and at the Red Cedar Symphony's home, the Fine Arts Center at UW-Barron County in Rice Lake, the following day, Sunday, November 15th, 4 p.m. Don't forget, Bernie McNally is at the Red Horse Gallery in Fountain City, but only through Saturday. That exhibit is called Assemblages. Well, thanks, Hannah, Debbie, and Dean. Sounds like a folk music group. We couldn't do this without you guys. Next week, author B.J. Hollers is in the Doghouse, another international film festival. That's the name. Comes to Eau Claire in a couple of weeks. We'll get to know Second Opinion Magazine, Alternatives to the Beaten Path. And more, always more on Spectrum West. I'm Al Ross. Thank you.